Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears off and running with you here Wednesday, June the 16th, 2021, 16 minutes past the hour. 5 days until the first day of summer. Only 5 days of spring left, and we really had a spring day yesterday. Temperatures were very mild. It was a great day. Hardly any humidity for the first time in quite a while, about a week and a half. Temperatures were good. I don't remember any rain yesterday. So it was a beautiful, beautiful day to get a lot of projects done here in central Ohio. Now, 5 days till summer. Now, here's what this means. So when will summer come? This is Wednesday, so summer will come on next Monday. Now, there'll be conjecture about this, as there is the four times a year we have these. We always get in this conversation. I don't think it's four times a year. Now, there are two solstices and two equinoxes. Now, I think that the spring and the fall changing of the seasons are called equinoxes. But the summer and the winter are called solstices. Now, the summer solstice is the longest day of the year, the longest day of daylight hours, which apparently will come next Monday. But there will be meteorologists all over television who will tell you in the next few days that it probably is not Monday. Because somewhere, somebody decided that we're going to track this, and we're going to get it to the pinpoint. So it will probably happen either on Sunday or it will happen on Tuesday, which makes no sense to me because I'm not sure why it moves. Because I thought that's why we put a leap year in, was so things don't move. Because we're not a complete 365-day-a-year calendar versus the rotation of the Earth. That was my understanding. So, because of that, we put in leap year, an extra day every 4 years to keep things balanced out. Well, if that's true, then how do these equinoxes and solstices keep moving around? I just think it's easy enough to say first day of summer will be June 21st. Now, I guess if somebody wants to come in and say, well, there'll be more daylight hours on Sunday than Monday, now that's something different. I don't know why there's a correlation between the first day of summer and the day with the most daylight hours. Now, I can understand that maybe scientifically, the day with the most daylight hours might be Sunday or Tuesday instead of Monday. But I don't know why the first day of the season would have to move. Because that's just something we do. We could say the first day of summer is July 1st, and that would be the first day of summer. I don't know what the significance is to line these up with the equinoxes and the solstices. But somebody did it at some point. Does anybody have any thoughts on this? This has been a long-term thing with me. It's right there with heat index and what do they call it in the winter? Wind chill. Wind chill and heat index. Now, wind chill, I mean, I guess I understand wind chill because when it's cold like that, if it is blowing, it probably does feel colder. And there's no doubt about it, when I've been out walking in the winter, if it's a night with no wind and it's 30 degrees, It feels a lot warmer than if the wind is whipping around. So I guess I can understand wind chill, but I don't understand heat index. Now, I know it has to do I think with the humidity. Now, humidity does make things feel more uncomfortable, but I don't know if it makes it warmer. Uncomfortable, yes. It makes it harder to breathe for people with allergies and asthma and things like that. And it makes it harder to breathe, I think, for the typical person because the air is just thicker. And you do perspire easier because it's so thick. The air is so thick. But I don't know that it actually feels warmer. I don't know. To me, it doesn't feel warmer. It just feels uncomfortable. Because you tend to sweat more, and your drinks tend to sweat more. You know, have you ever had a soft drink or anything, a can, and you'll see that it's just pouring with water down the side when you have high humidity? I don't think it feels warmer, it just feels uncomfortable. Now, if anybody would like to weigh in on any of this, there might be some scientists out there. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. I don't know how this all got wrapped in together, but that's the way it goes. Now, here's something. I actually have some facts today, because today is the fourth Vax-a-Million. Only two left. Only two chances left for you to win $1 million. Now, as last week went, when the guy in Richwood won, the governor showed up on his lawn. Now, I don't know what will happen tonight. Now, the first week, there really wasn't anything except an announcement. The second week, they Skype the winners in the next day to the press conference. Last week, the governor actually showed up on the lawn of the person who won. So, what will happen this week during our fourth Vax-a-Million drawing? Now, does anybody have any ideas? Aside from that, here's the thing. I saw this last night, so I know the exact numbers now. After 3 weeks of Vax-a-Million, 42.7%. 42.7% of Ohioans are vaccinated. I don't know that this is a whole lot above where we were when this all started. I thought when this all started, we were right around 40%. Maybe a little under, maybe a little over. So I don't know that a whole lot more people are getting vaccinated at this point. It's interesting to me that we're still only at 40%, and we've only got two more weeks of this. 42%. So did this work? Was it, less than half the people in the state are actually eligible for this contest. Only 42%. So I don't know if it is a success or it isn't. Everybody kept saying in the beginning, well, let's wait till the end and see if it's a success or not. I don't know. Is 42% a success? Is there any way to quantify the success of something like this? Now, a lot of people will say, if it got anybody to get vaccinated, that's a good thing. And I understand the theory behind saying that, but I don't think it's just a practical matter to get. I don't think it's practical to spend $5 million to get one person vaccinated. That I think is the practicality behind it. So if after $5 million we are still under 50% and we want to be at 70% by July the 4th was the idea, clearly that's not going to happen. Because it looks as if there is just a certain group of people, and it seems to be the majority in the state, are not going to get vaccinated. Or are waiting on something. Now, there is this idea that people are waiting. Now, I don't know at this point what they would be waiting on if that were it. Does anybody have any insight into this, what people are waiting on, if that indeed is the idea? I mean, are people waiting to see what happens to other people, waiting to see what happens with the pandemic? I don't know. I'm not sure what that waiting thing is all about, but that's the way it goes. So here we are, fourth week of Vax-a-Million. If you have anything to say this morning, give me a buzz here, 740-383-9944, but the number is 42% as we have it. Go ahead, caller.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing really good. Hey, I've spent a lot of time looking at the statistics that are available from the Ohio Department of Health on their coronavirus dashboard. And in my opinion, this Vax-a-Million is a complete and total failure. If you look at the, and they break it down by day, if you look at the number of vaccinations per day for the 2 weeks prior to the announcement of Vax-a-Million, then what you see is that they were at a certain level. He announces Vax-a-Million, and you see an increase for the 4 days after he made the announcement. Once you get one week out from the announcement of Vax-a-Million, the daily number of vaccinations get right back down to the level they were during that 2 weeks prior to the announcement. And now we're far enough out that the daily numbers are even below what the daily numbers were those 2 weeks prior to the announcement.
So where was the state, as of last night, I saw the number was 42%. Where were we before the announcement?
The number you saw at 42%, was that for people that were fully vaccinated?
Fully vaccinated, yeah.
Yeah, I think the number, I don't know if I've got it right here handy or not, I don't have that. I think it was 41. I think it was about 41 or 40 point something, because I know that last week we were at 46% for people having received their first vaccination or fully vaccinated. But as far as the fully vaccinated, I think it was like, at the time of the announcement, I think it was like just under 40 or right at 40%.
Now, whether or not Vax-a-Million, because some people will say it's a success because it got some people vaccinated, some people will say it's a complete failure, but overall, what is the story on this, the vaccine in general? Because here we are at 42% fully vaccinated in the middle of June, and by July 4th, they wanted to be at 70%. That's clearly not going to happen. What happened?
There's a lot of things. Like I said, I've been spending a lot of time looking at the numbers. And, for instance, when they give their percentages of fully vaccinated or, even having received the first one, it's as a percentage of the entire population of the state of Ohio. Okay? They're taking it as a percentage of the entire population. What they're leaving out of the equation is you've got 15% of the population of Ohio is not even eligible to get the vaccination because they're 12 years old or younger or under the age of 12. So only 85% of the total population is even eligible to get vaccinated. So it would be extremely hard to reach that 70% of the total population being vaccinated when only 85% is even eligible. That's one thing that we got to keep in mind when we're looking at the numbers. The second thing I think you need to look at is the breakdown by age and the breakdown by race as far as who is getting vaccinated and who is not getting vaccinated. For instance, at the 40 and up, they're over 50% are vaccinated in the state of Ohio. For instance, 40 to 49-year-olds is 51%. 50 to 59-year-olds is 59%. 60 and over ranges anywhere from 70 to 83% vaccinated, depending on the age group. Now, It's the 30 to 39 that's at in the low 40s, mid 40s, low 40s. It's the 20 to 29 that's in the, they're in the 30s. So you have to ask yourself, why do we see a large percentage of the 40, 50 and over vaccinated, and we see such a small percentage of the 30s and 20s? And my personal opinion on that is that you have to look at how people think how much of a threat or a concern coronavirus is. And let's face it, if you're, you know, senior citizen or you're getting up there in years, you recognize it as a real threat. If you're in your 20s and you're in your 30s, typically those were the age groups that had the lowest percentage of testing positive. That age group didn't come up, you know, they weren't the bulk of the people getting the virus. And if they did, a lot of them were asymptomatic and never even knew that they had it in the first place. So I think you've got a segment of the population that doesn't really, they recognize the fact that, yeah, it's a virus and, yeah, old people are dying and people are getting it, but I didn't get it. None of my friends got sick. Why would I get the vaccination?
Well, I guess what I don't understand is the percentage of the population that got polio was a very small percentage of the population when you look on the whole. And polio was not even a contagious illness. I mean, being around somebody who had polio, you did not get polio. So when the polio vaccine came about in modern times, most people flocked to it because they did not want to get polio. And they also did not want to get polio as they got older. So what confuses me here, this vaccination is completely free right now. It's not going to be completely free forever. Everybody's going to get older. I don't think this is totally going to go away. Ever. It doesn't seem like it's going to, because it is a viral disease. It is communicable between people. So when you get older, wouldn't you want to have had the vaccine at some point so you can't contract it?
I would think that, yeah, you would. But also, too, keep in mind that, you know, we've been told that, well, you probably will have to get the coronavirus vaccine every year, or you may have to get a booster on a regular basis, and we don't know how long it's going to be good for. So, you know, if I'm a person that I'm, you know, 25 years old and I didn't get sick and nobody around me got sick, and it's like, well, I don't need to get the vaccine now. You know, maybe when I get older, it might be a concern of mine, but I don't need to get it now. I mean, I could see where that would play into people's minds.
I can see it, but you know, one of the things about this illness that I think will be one of the long-term legacies of it is that if you went into a public place, especially now, and you are not vaccinated, but you decide not to wear your mask. Now, let's say you are younger, and you're just a carrier. Well, let's say there's somebody in there who also believes, like you, that you don't need to get this vaccination, but they're a little older than you are. You could give them the illness that they would not have gotten if they were at home, and it could kill them. I guess that is the part that I don't understand. And I think that's why people get so angry about this. Unlike with polio, you know, you could not give somebody polio. Polio had to be contracted and a different way, bacterially, pretty much. But this is not bacterial at all. It has to come from somebody else. There's no other way to get it. So everybody who has died and everybody who has been hospitalized got this from somebody else.
I agree. No, that's true. And I think, you know, I think it kind of goes back to, you know, younger people. Let's compare it to polio. I think, you know, you could look at it, coronavirus, and say, if I get it, you know, it's going to be like the bad flu. Most people don't think they're going to die from it, even if they get it. Now, that's not to say that, you know, you shouldn't have that attitude. But I think most people think, you know, I'm not going to die from it if I get it. You know, I'm young, I'm healthy, or I'm whatever. But, you know, something like polio at the time, it was known how devastating the effects of polio could be if you got it. And because you can't get it from somebody else, then you don't know how you're going to get it. I think, in my mind, that kind of makes it more fearful. Something like polio makes it more fearful than something like coronavirus. You know, I can't get polio from somebody else, so therefore I better make sure that I take whatever steps are necessary that I don't get it, because I don't know how I'm going to get it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, if you think you can get it from somebody else, the flu, the coronavirus, then you maybe stay away from people, or maybe you will wear your mask, or maybe you'll just take your chances. But something like polio is like, I don't know how I could prevent myself from getting it other than getting the vaccine.
Well, you know, the strange thing about it to me is that anybody knows in the last 30 to 40 years, to go to public school, there are a number of vaccinations that you have to get. And if you don't get those, they will not let you come to school after a point. Also, there are a lot of jobs, including teachers, where you have to have had certain vaccinations and certain tests done. A matter of fact, certain tests have to be done every so many years to make sure you do not have a communicable disease, a viral disease that you could transfer to the kids working around the public. So I guess the idea that this has not been made mandatory, to my knowledge, for any employees yet, the fact that it would, that people are taking that so offensively, that you know, they can't do this, this is America, you can't make us do something like this. Well, things like this have been going on for years and years and years. It's just a different type of inoculation.
Yeah, and I think as long as it's not mandatory, there's going to be a lot of resistance to it. I have a feeling, my gut feeling is, all those vaccinations that you have to go to school, if they were not mandatory, we would probably see a large section of our population not have their kids vaccinated. That would mean we would see a resurgence in measles and mumps and some of those kinds of things, but I think you would have a lot of people not have their kids vaccinated if it wasn't required. It's just, I think it kind of gets back to people's feelings about what their rights are.
Well, you know, and that's an interesting question, because this has brought up, what are people's rights? And I have yet to hear anybody say that, as I said, this vaccine is mandatory. So if it's not mandatory, I'm not sure where people's rights have been trampled on.
As far as the vaccine goes, and it's not mandatory, nobody's rights have been trampled on. I mean, we could have a whole nother discussion about people's rights being trampled on if we look at businesses that were shut down, if we look at, you know, some of those kinds of things. But as far as the vaccine itself, and as of right now, it's not mandatory, I can't say where anybody's rights have been trampled on there. I mean, they're asking us to do it. They're throwing carrots out there to get people to do it, but nobody's rights are being trampled on.
Well, you know, the business thing has really baffled me, because the private businesses that were allowed to stay open, who put in the mask mandate, now people went nuts. You know, this is America, we shouldn't have to wear masks, so on and so forth. But you can't go into a business without clothes on. You can't go into a business and start screaming and yelling. You can't go in. I mean, a private business is just that. That private business makes their own rules. And the mask mandate was just a mandate. Nobody was going to come in and arrest or close down the business if people were not wearing masks. I don't understand where that became a thing. And also, when they shut the businesses down,
Rules are made all the time for businesses. If you don't pay your taxes, they'll shut you down. If you don't pass your health inspections a certain amount of times, they'll shut you down. If you are doing things there that you should not be doing, they will shut you down. If you hire illegal immigrants, they will fine you and shut you down. It's not like there aren't rules for private businesses, and I think one of the problems with private businesses in this was that they did allow them to stay open in the beginning, and they took no precaution, and things were swelling at that point.
I think the bigger problem with it is that some businesses were shut down totally and completely, while other businesses were allowed to stay open under certain rules and regulations. The whole idea that certain businesses were determined to be non-essential. You know, in an economy like we have in the United States of America, every business is essential. If you're providing a product or a service to the general public and there's a demand for it and you're able to, you know, operate a profitable business, then you are an essential business. But it was the idea that to label some as unessential, and there were types of businesses that were closed completely, that were not allowed to be open at all, while other businesses were allowed to operate. And you can probably tell by what I'm saying, Scott, is that that's what I had a problem with.
Well,
the fact that some businesses were not allowed to be open, period.
Well, I tell you, in the beginning, if anybody goes back and listens to the early shows that probably in March or April when we were on the shutdown, I was tending at that point to err on the side of, okay, people know about this now, leave the businesses open, and if people don't want to go because of the illness, they won't go. And I thought that that's what would happen, that would be the sensible shot in the beginning of this. And then the restrictions did ease up toward the end of May last year, and they allowed the restaurants to open back up with restrictions, and what happened? Everybody went, and it got bad. The numbers did go up, and the hospitals did fill up. So I don't know why, when people are left up to their own devices, they don't pay attention. Now, when they were shut down, of course you couldn't go, so that's just the way it was. But I don't know what has happened to where, well, look at things now. Things are busy. People are trying to get help by the truckload. Grocery stores are pouring over with business. Restaurants are busy again. Everything is busy, but we're only at 42% inoculated. People know the risks of what's going on, but they don't. There's no correlation, and I don't really understand that.
I think what it is people know the risks, and then they decide for themselves how much of a risk they're willing to take. Whether it's an intelligent reason or not, they determine how much risk they're going to take. But I wanted to throw out another set of statistics to you, Scott, that I find very interesting. And that's when you look in the state of Ohio, vaccination rates based on race were at 62% of the Asian population, were at 45% of the white population, and you're just barely at 30% of the black or African American population. And I think that's one thing that is very interesting when you look at it that way, and it doesn't take very long. I mean, I've talked to several people about it, and I hear the same thing. I've heard it four different times, and that is the African American community is very distrustful with government about certain things, and in this area they're very distrustful with government because of the Tuskegee experiment, which I imagine you're probably familiar with the Tuskegee experiment.
Yeah, well, you know, I can understand distrustfulness. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But I think one of the problems there as well is I don't think that people are fully aware that it is completely free. I think that that has not been put out there enough. That it's free. Because when I also look at those numbers that you just gave, it's usually the same amount of numbers for a death. I know that the African American population dies at a much earlier rate than Caucasians. And the best we've been able to chalk that up to is that there is a financial component, an insurance component. They don't go to the doctor as often as Caucasian people, which sounds nuts, but that's what they chalk that up to, is that they don't have the means to get to the doctor, they don't have the means to see a doctor, they don't have a primary care physician, and this has been the case for a long time.
I think that's part of it. But I think a big part of it too is there's a lot of people that just aren't convinced that the vaccine is safe from the standpoint of it hasn't been around long enough. There's a lot of people that are concerned about, are there any long-term effects? There are people that got hesitant when they had to pull back on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine because of what they had, 7 or 8 cases of women that had blood clots. Now, when you're talking about several million vaccines out there and 7 or 8 people have blood clots, that's negligible when it comes to side effects. I mean, it's totally negligible when you're talking side effects. But it made the news, and it was talked about, and they pulled the vaccine. And, people watch TV, and if you're watching TV, every third commercial is for if you or a loved one died while taking or had serious side effects while taking this medicine, call this law firm. And you see that for, medicine after medicine after medicine on TV that, you can sue if you lost a loved one or you had these side effects. Granted, those are medications, and now we're talking about a vaccine, but I think for a lot of people there's that fear or that distrust that, so if I get this vaccine, am I going to have all these serious side effects 3 years from now? Whether that's founded fear or not, I think that's part of it.
Well, but the odd thing to me about this is, not only did we have over half a million people die in the United States from this, but we had many people get sick. Now, thank goodness many people recovered. And I was looking at the numbers yesterday. They're much smaller now. But it's something like, 200. It was under 300, but 200 and something people contracted it, still are contracting it every, day. And then I think 31 people died yesterday because of it. So, it's still going on, but the interesting thing to me is that when people get sick, that 200 and something people, new cases, they have to be tested, or we wouldn't know that they have it, which means they must have had symptoms, because usually people who don't have symptoms don't go to the doctor. So they had symptoms. Where did they go? They went to their doctor. What did their doctor do? Their doctor prescribed them a medicine. Those 30-some-odd people who died yesterday, they were in the hospital, I'm sure, at some point. They will take the ventilators. They will take the therapies that they've developed to try to fight this. They will take the medications. They will take all of that, but not the vaccine?
Well, we could talk about the numbers. Because the numbers themselves cause a problem from the Ohio Department of Health, all right? Winter flu season, 2017-2018 flu season. State of Ohio, 17,000 hospitalizations due to the flu. 18-19, 10,000 hospitalizations due to the flu. 19-20. 11,000 hospitalizations due to the flu. 2021, 122 hospitalizations due to the flu. What happened to the 10, 11, 15,000 people a year being hospitalized for the flu that this past flu season we only had 122?
Well,
it's because they were diagnosed as having coronavirus. So you have to ask yourself, is coronavirus and the common flu, are they two different things? Or is the coronavirus just the latest strain of flu that every year we have to get a flu shot for?
Well, see, I'm not sure about that, because here's what I know, and this seems like a trite thing, and I'm only basing it on myself, but every year of my life, since the beginning, since I can remember, I have gotten some kind of cold. Always. I mean, a cold to the point to where, and nothing hospitalization, nothing like that, but a cold to the point to where, you know, it's hard to talk. You get it starts with the sore throat, and then it moves into your nose, and then you get the runny nose, and you get congested, and you get, the watery eyes. And sometimes it's two or three times in the course of a winter this will happen, between October and April. Every year of my life. A matter of fact, to the point, I mean, I did not go get anything from the doctor for it. It's just a cold. For whatever reason, it's a cold or maybe a sore throat, and I would take NyQuil or DayQuil or something like that for it, and for a few days, I would try to eat a lot of carbohydrates to keep the energy up, and you get some body aches. Every year of my life, that has happened. Every single year. This year, didn't happen once. Didn't happen one time. Not once. And the only difference, because I certainly did not have the vaccine yet. I didn't have the vaccine in that period of time. So what caused that? Why did I not get a cold? Why did I not get a sore throat? Why did I not get any body aches? Why did it never happen? The only thing I was doing differently was wearing a mask. Now, I'm not wearing a mask now. So if I get a cold now, you know, I've got to chalk it up to that.
I don't doubt that some colds and flus were prevented by people wearing masks, but I can't buy that you would have a 99% reduction in flu hospitalizations simply because of wearing a mask. The CDC themselves in July of last year, the CDC themselves said last year that probably only 20% of the coronavirus deaths were actually caused specifically by coronavirus, that the balance was people that had underlying conditions that would have died otherwise. And that's from the CDC. Well, I mean, you can look that up on their website.
Right. But, you know, I think that's misleading in a way, how people present that, because for years I did a lot of work for the Diabetes Foundation here in town, and one thing, and I don't have diabetes, but the JDRF, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, and one of the problems they always had, and they told me this, was that juvenile diabetes causes blindness, it causes congestive heart failure, it causes heart attacks, it causes strokes, it causes amputations, it causes all kinds of circulation problems, it causes gout, it causes numerous amounts of diseases. On the death certificate, it will say person died of a heart attack, person died of congestive heart failure, person died of a stroke. It never says diabetes. It very rarely ever says complications of diabetes, but their risk factors went up, and I think much like with coronavirus, it is probably true that a completely healthy person in most cases did not go in and just die from coronavirus, but the respiratory failure certainly I think had to be caused by that. The congestive heart failure might have been caused by that. Certainly if you had these underlying conditions, it exacerbated the problem, which I think is why it was worse in people who had these illnesses.
Oh, and I think you're right, and that's one of the problems when we try to quantitate, when we try to put numbers, when we try to put statistics on things like this, because there are however you want to say it, it's got different ways of looking at it, because it is how do you say this person specifically died of this? Well, how do we know that didn't cause these other problems that they died from? You know what I mean? It's like, it's so hard to quantitate things, make things quantitative.
Well, it is, but just in my own personal experience, and I'm a free proponent of people can do what they want to do. If people want to get the vaccine, they can. If people don't, they don't have to. But the cold thing has really shocked me, because I guess it's in your own mind, you know your body, you know what you've experienced in life, and that to me is so dramatic. Not that a cold is going to do me in. It's just somewhere along January, I thought, why am I not getting this? Every year of my life it happens. Why is it not happening this year? It was just, it still blows my mind in a way, because I still have not had a cold, but it's not cold season now. If next cold season starts, or this, I didn't have one last summer either, and sometimes I get a summer cold. If I get a cold now, I'm going to wonder why that happened. And that to me is a little bothersome, because if it is because the mask prevented that, could we have done this before coronavirus to avoid things like the flu that are contagious? I mean, when you really think about it, in society, if you work in the public or you are in the public at all, the flu is contagious. The common cold is contagious. There are so many illnesses that are contagious, and you are in people's face all day long. I mean, what are the chances you're not going to get it? You have zero protection, and they have zero protection in giving it to you.
Well, and I think time will tell if I'm wrong or not, but I think one of the things that's going to come out of this is I think in the future, a lot of people are going to be a lot more aware of colds and flus and spreading of that. And I think, we may see some people during flu season wearing masks or doing some things that they would not have normally done in the past. Now, I could be a total idiot when I say that, but my gut feeling is I think there is going to be somewhat of more awareness of these types of things, and some people taking steps to prevent it.
Well, yeah, and the one thing I hope is at the end of this, people are just aware of what is a viral illness, what can be transferred from person to person, because this is very important. I don't know that people thought of colds and the flu like that before this. And I there was no COVID to think about. And one of the things, early on, and I think this has been lost, one of the things that scientists were always so afraid of, because people talked about all the horrible illnesses that we've had in the past that came along that weren't pandemics, like swine flu and all that. The problem with this one was that it was respiratory and that it was viral. The biggest fear I think most doctors ever had was that there would be a viral illness that was respiratory, because the lungs are the lungs, and if you can't breathe, that's going to be lights out to all your other organs. And I think that's what the big, huge fear was here. And I think it's also the fear for the 58% of Ohioans that are not vaccinated right now, is they're making that choice, and that certainly is their choice. But, I wonder, when I saw those numbers yesterday, 31 people dead, I thought, I wonder how many of those 31 people, by all rights, if I think about it now, could have gotten the vaccination. It's free. They live in Ohio. We have a ready supply. there's really no age limitation except for the kids right now. So of those 31 people, would any of them have died if they would have just went and got the vaccination? They certainly could have.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Well, we're going to break here, but I appreciate you calling in. It's an interesting topic and an interesting conversation.
Thanks, Scott. We'll see you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. We're going to break back in 15 minutes.
She has the greatest laugh in the world, and she was the voice of one of the greatest villains in Disney history, Ursula from The Little Mermaid. And along the way, she did a lot of great game shows and television series and worked with people like Jimmy Durante, Gloria Swanson, Danny Thomas, Sid Caesar. The list goes on and on. She is amazing, the amazing Pat Carroll. Pat, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Scott.